Welcome to the Nutritious and Delicious podcast with me, Bethany. Our mission is to support you as a busy parent with your nutrition and well-being. After all, at Nutritious and Delicious, we believe a healthy family starts with a healthy parent. So I'm super excited. I have Lauren Curtin here with me today. So welcome, Lauren. She actually is a registered medicine practitioner. She is in Chinese medicine and she focuses on women's health. And she is actually a herbalist based in Melbourne, Australia. So she's on the other side of the globe here, guys. She centers her practice around supporting women to navigate their hormones, menstrual cycles, and fertility. And Lauren believes every woman has the right to know how her own body works. So welcome, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me, Bethany.
Yeah, I'm excited because this is a great topic. Like, I find a lot of clients and stuff are going through sort of these hormonal imbalances, and it's be nice to kind of talk to you and find out what's really going on underneath. So the topic today we actually have is family futures and wellness planning for prospective and growing parents. So I would love for you to come on here and actually explain to us how you kind of started in the space.
Sure. So I started a long time ago. I did, my story starts when I was little. My family has always kind of tended towards natural health, more kind of alternative medicine strategies. And when I was, I think I was 8 years old, I became really sick with Ross River fever. And I was sick for quite a few months, kind of like bedridden. I was in grade four at school and I had to take months off school. And it was actually quite intense at the time. And I had kind of the typical experience of my parents really trying to figure out what was going on. Before I was diagnosed, they were trying to figure out what was going on. And the doctors were struggling to give them answers. Eventually, I was diagnosed with Ross River fever. But they weren't given a lot of support as to what to do to help me, because my mum always says I was a child that was kind of skipping around the house and all of a sudden I was in bed and couldn't move. Right. So they really wanted to know how to support me more quickly to recover. And they weren't really given a lot of information. I was just kind of saying, you know, just kind of wait and eventually she will get better. And my parents weren't exactly satisfied with that answer. So they were seeking out other options. And I ended up getting a lot of support from this practitioner who I believe was also a medical doctor, but she was also a kinesiologist and a herbalist. Wow. And she helped me a lot. And not long after seeing her, I really started to get onto the road to recovery. So, I mean, for me as a young child, that was quite normal. You know, you don't really know the difference between Western medicine and an alternative type medicine. It's just you're going to see someone. Right. You don't really have that context when you're little. But that was very normal for me. I didn't grow up with antibiotics. I only took my first round of antibiotics when I was in my 20s. And which was at the time also didn't seem strange, but now looking back on it, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad that I was able to avoid what kids now are exposed to, which is many, many, many rounds of antibiotics when they're little. And also we didn't reach for things like Panadol. So that was kind of the way that I was grown up with, or the way that I was raised. And that was just very normal. And we went to see a chiropractor, and I always knew that I wanted to do something in the health space because I found that really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I would design what my chiropractic clinic would look like one day. And then when I was a teenager and it kind of came to deciding what avenue I was actually going to go down as a career, this was when I was about 17, I was really looking into physiotherapy, chiropractic, occupational therapy. That was the way that I was leaning towards. Mm-hmm. And then just by chance, I came across this pamphlet on Chinese medicine at like a school fair where they're talking about careers and things like that. And I was just completely drawn to it. I was reading in this pamphlet about Chinese medicine and I was like, wow, this sounds really amazing. I think I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just decided on the spot, I think I'll do that instead. Say goodbye to my chiropractic career. And I'm just going to do Chinese medicine. I'd never had a treatment before. I'd never seen a Chinese medicine practitioner. And then I ended up going to an open day at the university that I ended up going to and just fell in love with it. And it was very, now looking back on it, I don't know if I would go into such a decision with such little information. But at the time I was like, I'm going to do. And I just did it. And then when I started studying, I was so grateful that that is what I chose, because I completely fell in love with Chinese medicine. And like every day since then, I'm just like so glad that that's the decision that I made at such a young age, because I have like zero regrets. I love it so much. And it is even better than what I had thought it was going to be. And as helping people and as helping women in this specific way with fertility and menstrual health, it's so fulfilling. And there's also such a need for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. That's great that you've kind of come from a background where you've experienced like the whole holistic yourself. And like you said, it's kind of just second nature to you. A lot of people I deal with usually go the medical route first and then they go the holistic route. So you kind of had a very different experience from going holistic, and then you realized there's medical as well eventually. And like what we talked about in terms of the industry in the last several years, there seems to be a lot of fertility issues. So kind of give us a bit of a background in terms of what you're seeing sort of as patients right now in the last several years, and have things gotten worse? Have things changed within the industry, and what you're seeing in terms of family futures in this wellness space?
Mm-hmm. I think a few things have been changing in the last few years. I do think that there's so much more awareness now about things like contraception and things like what the pill does to your body or what IUDs do. I think women are becoming so much more interested and also informed. There's so many more books that have come out that are just really accessible reads, but really go into the science behind what things like hormonal contraception do to your body, and then the potential, you know, side effects or things that you can experience when you come off something like hormonal contraception. And I've definitely noticed in my practice an avalanche of women coming off the pill, coming off their contraception, because they no longer want to be on that. Not even in order to fall pregnant necessarily, more just so that they're wanting to now have their regular cycles, have their natural cycles. Mm-hmm. And that is more interesting now, or it's more motivating. There's just a lot more. I think social media also is really helpful with that. I mean, so many amazing practitioners are sharing that information online, and it's just so much more accessible. Whereas, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, this type of information was out there, but you really had to search for it. Whereas now you could be scrolling on your phone and see a post about the pill, and that might plant a seed of being like, oh, maybe I want to do something different. Maybe I want to address my menstrual health in a different way. So I think that has played a really large role, because what happens is a lot of women have started something like the pill for symptom management.
Right.
So over 65% of the reason why people start the pill is for symptom management, not even for contraception as to what it's designed for.
Right.
And so if it's being used as symptom management, then it's like, okay, well, if we're going to come off something like the pill, now we really need to address what's causing these symptoms for you in the first place in a different way. So for a lot of women, they may have started the pill for really painful periods. They may have started it for acne or irregular cycles. There's so many different reasons why we can go on the pill. But once you come off the pill, it's likely that those symptoms will return if nothing has changed in the time that you are on the pill.
Right.
In terms of nutrition, environment, lifestyle. And so then you're kind of faced with, okay, now I have to actually deal with this problem. But I think that's wonderful, because then we can actually get to the root of the problem. Because for a lot of women, they may have started something like the pill when they were a teenager and they were starting to get their period, and their periods are painful, so they were popped on the pill. And that, and, you know, from what I witness with women, that's very much delaying the problem.
Yeah.
Because typically once they come off the pill, the period pain is still there. And if it was something more advanced actually driving the pain, something like endo, the endo has had all of that time to kind of progress and not be addressed. And then, you know, you can come off the pill and then you can be met with worse symptoms sometimes. So I kind of see it as, you know, women are kind of getting what help they could be receiving whilst they're on the pill is paused because they're not getting those symptoms coming up, which would prompt you to get further investigations.
Right.
It's all kind of masked on the pill. So when they come off, then it's really time to see what's actually going on and then try and address it in a way that is actually responding to their body.
That's very interesting. I had a very similar experience myself. I was on the pill and everything for symptoms too. And again, like you said, it masks the symptoms. And unfortunately, when I came off it, I didn't have anything for 2 years straight. Mm-hmm. So to me, like there was nothing sort of like my doctor said, there was nothing physically wrong with me. I ended up seeing an endocrinologist. But I, again, it wasn't addressed. And really what was uncovering, it was PCOS, polycystic ovarian mm-hmm. syndrome, right? So the endometriosis, like you explained, that's the, what you said by endo, very painful periods, like masking it. And obviously, you know, that getting worse and stuff for women. So with, I guess, women having that sort of coming off the pill and then realizing like, oh, I still actually have all these issues. Are you finding it's taking them years later to get pregnant with the fertility and the acupuncture? Like, is that kind of where people are coming to you now going, well, I thought everything was fine because I was on it for like 10 something years. And then all of a sudden, like I come off it and all these things are wrong with me. But really, it's just masked what would have been happening for those last 10 years, correct?
Yes. And that can be a really confronting and frustrating reality for a lot of women yeah. because, you know, you're kind of pulled into a false sense of security of thinking, you know, everything is seemingly okay because you're getting a regular pill bleed.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything kind of seems fine. And then when you get to the stage, in this case, if you're ready to fall pregnant, I know a lot of women are told that when you're ready to conceive, you know, you can stop taking the pill and then start trying to conceive basically straight away. Yeah. And that's also a false sense of security because it's not always that simple.
Right.
You know, in someone like you, in your experience, you know, some women can come off the pill and be ready to conceive and then they're not ovulating right. and they may not ovulate for 3 months. It might be 6 months. It might be 9 months or a year. And we just don't know how your body's going to respond
right.
post-pill until it's happening. And that can be, you know, really devastating if you're fully ready to conceive. You kind of set everything up. You know, you kind of planned out timeline wise, like this is, you know, we're ready now and this is a really great time, but you may not actually be able to physically start trying purely because your cycle hasn't returned yet and you're not ovulating. And then, you know, that's an experience that I've seen so many times in the clinic and women are like, I wish that I had have known this.
Yeah, it's quite upsetting for people.
It's so upsetting because it's just unnecessary, you know, like if people were informed about this, then you can plan accordingly and think, okay, well, you know, I went on the pill for maybe it was for PCOS. I'm going to expect that these symptoms will still be there. I don't know how long it's going to take for my body to reestablish post-pill. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm going to give myself like a good 6 months before trying to conceive, like 6 months stopping the pill, waiting, you know, 6 months and then getting ready. Like we really need to give ourselves that buffer zone. Just to give our body time to sort itself out. And then also for preconception care. But the scenario that we're talking about is one of the really big drivers that I see of women seeking out assisted reproductive technology. So going down the path of things like IUI, IUF, IVF, mm-hmm. Because they're ready to conceive and post-pill their bodies may be, you know, quite out of whack maybe, you know, as we said, the period pain may have returned. Maybe their cycles are just irregular. Maybe they are ovulating, but they're having like 40-day cycles. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, their periods may not have returned at all. And that's a really, really common point at where, you know, a couple will go and see the GP and be like, look, like we've been trying for like 6 months and nothing's happening. But they may not have actually been actively trying for 6 months. If she's not ovulating, then we can't really count that as, you know, we've been trying for 6 months, you know, we have to look at it right. differently. And then that really prompts being like, okay, I'll refer you to a fertility specialist. And that really sets couples down the path of a scenario like IVF, which, you know, in a lot of cases that I've seen have been, you know, has actually been unnecessary because it's been mainly because of an ovulatory issue. And as we know, IVF doesn't fix ovulatory issues. It can pull our eggs out. But that underlying mechanism of what was driving issues with ovulation isn't addressed.
Mm-hmm.
But supporting ovulation is something that is actually quite straightforward. And there are many, many things that we can do to help to support ovulation like either reestablishing in the first place or helping it to become more regular. And it's a really, really common scenario that I see for couples seeking out things like IVF when it's something that we can try so many different things for first mm-hmm. to help the body.
Okay, that's great. I love that. I have some questions around that for you because it made me think of the time factor. I think a lot of people, definitely in the Western day and age, I think we're very much, we don't like to be patient and we want things right away. And I think that's why the pill or any kind of contraceptive in terms of changing your body chemistry is very enticing to, I think, women especially because you don't want to sort of have those painful times. You don't want to sort of go through different experiences like acne and hormonal imbalances and all those kind of mood changes and stuff too was a lot of reasons why people went on the pill. And then when you come off of it, you're sort of looking at it as a time thing like, okay, well now like maybe you're in your 30s or something and you want to start having a family. You feel like you're on this like ticking time, waiting to get pregnant. And I think that's where a lot of people get frustrated and go into, well, now we need to kind of go to the extreme and go to the IVF solution, which is very expensive, I hear. And it's very hard to be on as well, in terms of hormones and things like that, because you're jacking up your body with false hormones again to try and sort of start something. What would you say in terms of being a holistic practitioner to somebody before they would go to the IVF solution? And you mentioned supporting ovulation, like how mm-hmm. could you kind of establish that with somebody and like a realistic time frame for them to look at? So this is kind of now getting mm-hmm. more into sort of the solutions to help people.
For sure. So in terms of time frames, we're really working with the body in terms of time frames. So because the way that our follicles develop, so in our ovaries there are many, many different follicles, and there is a fluid-filled sac that houses an immature egg cell. And so the process of follicular genesis, which is how a follicle fully matures from step one all the way until ovulation, mm-hmm. that whole process actually takes 13 months.
Wow, that's a long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
However, the final 3 months of maturation is when we really have a significant impact over the health of that follicle.
Okay.
Because it's when that follicle receives a blood supply through tiny capillaries, and it's through the blood supply that that follicle is receiving nutrients, it's having exposure to hormones, it's having exposure to, you know, our environmental chemicals and things like this. So mm-hmm. it's the final 3 months of maturation that is really, really significant. And it's in those final 3 months that we can have a really big influence over both egg quality and then also the health of the ovulation, because how healthy our egg is and how healthy that follicle is really has a strong impact over the health of our hormones, mm-hmm. because it's that follicle that releases our estrogen, that releases our testosterone and eventually our progesterone. So the health of our eggs and the health of our follicles plays a really big role in the health of our menstrual cycles, the health of ovulation. So in terms of time frames, we really need to give ourselves at least 3 months when we're trying to make a significant impact on our fertility, on our menstrual health, because for example, if we start implementing a change today, we won't see the full effects from that for 3 months' time until that follicle that's maturing now eventually ovulates. We should see little changes happening before then, but we really like to give it a full 3 months before we're seeing a significant change. And that's just how our body works. You know, when I talk to my patients about, you know, timelines, because everyone wants to know, you know, like how long should I kind of give this or how long should I expect? We always need to have that 3 month mark in our minds. And that's really the minimum because, you know, for someone that has significant menstrual health challenges, you know, I'd be looking at, you know, give yourself a good 6 months.
Yeah.
Especially when we're thinking about preconception care as well, because it's not just, we just want to ovulate and you know, have a healthy regular cycle. We also want to be healthy as a whole prior to falling pregnant, because as we know, the state of our health and our partner's health at the moment of conception plays a really big role in the health of future Bubba, because it's those two cells coming together, the health of those two cells, is then dictating a whole future person. So we want those cells to be as healthy as possible.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. And that's why we really need to think about preconception care whilst we're also on something like the pill or an IUD or whatever it is. We need to kind of have in the back of our minds, okay, whenever I'm kind of, if I think I'm potentially approaching feeling ready to fall pregnant, I will want to stop my contraception a lot earlier than when I'm actually ready to fall pregnant, to give yourself that time. And even from the perspective of like nutrient depletion, the oral contraceptive pill can impact nutrient absorption. So things like B vitamins, zinc, magnesium, folate. It turns out that a lot of the critical nutrients needed for fertility are depleted whilst on the pill. And that's just how some medications work, that it can compromise nutrient absorption. But we really don't want to be falling pregnant in a depleted state by any means. So you also want to give yourself that time to, even if your cycle is great, you know, even if your cycle returns straight away, it's regular, it's seemingly symptom-free, I always still recommend giving yourself that time to actually replenish your body so that you're not going into pregnancy depleted. Mm-hmm. And that also supports your fertility to have your nutrient stores topped up, and then also supporting you during pregnancy. And then I also think very long-term, I'm thinking about what this woman is going to be like postpartum. If she's going into pregnancy depleted, she's going to be that much more depleted postpartum. And then I'm also thinking about if she has another baby, she'll be going into that next pregnancy even more depleted. So if we can start from the beginning, really topped up, really thinking about our nutrition, that chain reaction is 4 years to come at the benefits we see.
I definitely heard about the whole B12 and everything being depleted by like the pill and everything and nutrients. I was wondering when you were talking if there's anything to do with the, because I didn't realize the 13 months was really a long time for the actual cycle of the follicular phase to go around. Mm-hmm. Does, when you say that the maturity of it, and it's kind of dependent upon like your nutrients and everything too, and the blood supply getting to it, does anything have to do in terms of like iron or thyroid? Because there's so many people I deal with that have like thyroid issues and all that. So like when that's all depleted and your thyroid is off and your iron's off, maybe you've had a few kids before, does that affect it as well? Like, is that kind of playing a role?
Absolutely. Iron plays a huge role in ovulation specifically. So low iron is very much associated with long menstrual cycles or anovulation in general. So just having low iron in of itself can prevent ovulation from occurring. The exact same with the thyroid. So the thyroid is crucial for so many things, as you know. It's crucial for everything, but it's very, really, really involved in the way egg cells mature. And it's really, really involved in ovulation. And again, I mean, and then also hormone production. But issues with the thyroid are very much associated with issues with the menstrual cycle and then also fertility. Because we think about, I would say specifically hypothyroid in this case, because it's so much more common than hyperthyroid. If we think about hypothyroid, that's everything is slowing down. Metabolism is slowing down. The actual, you know, cellular functioning is slowed down with hypothyroid. Everything is being turned down.
Yeah.
That's why people get sluggish, like digestion changes, skin, hair changes, because everything at a cellular level is slowing down. But if we think about that from, you know, from more of a menstrual health point of view, that means that the way in which the eggs are maturing is being slowed down. Like it's like the body doesn't have enough energy to be maturing these eggs promptly and succinctly. So it's very common to have long menstrual cycles where ovulation is really delayed. Because the body is just unable to mature the eggs fast enough.
So is that kind of like the chicken and the egg kind of thing? Like, is that if you have a thyroid issue, like what is causing the slowdown in terms of the body of not having enough energy? Because the reproductive system is secondary. It's not like a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you have to stay alive. So I would think that the reproductive system would be compromised first in the body if the body is in a slow way. Like what causes this slow down in thyroid then, especially with women then?
That's a really big question. I mean, in terms of thyroid, there's so many different things that can cause it to be underactive, for sure. I mean, lifestyle is a really big one, because if people are living in a really stressful way, if they're living in a really like go, go, go state, if their lifestyle is very stressful, even if they don't mentally feel stressed, if just the way that they're living is like constantly go, 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 and not a lot of downtime, the body can recognize that. So we're thinking about it at the level of the hypothalamus in the brain, is constantly scanning our environment at a subconscious level. And if the hypothalamus is detecting like a lot of external chaos going on, then the body can be like, okay, let's just slow things down. Like the body can make you slow down if it thinks you're kind of heading for burnout type of thing.
Well, it's almost that notion of like you getting sick when it's like, you know, you keep doing so much and then your body's like, yeah, you're good. You're going to just be sick for a week or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And it's going to make you slow down. So I can see that it could do that.
Yes. It's like a protective mechanism because the body is always trying to work for us.
Right.
And if the body's kind of sensing potentially imminent danger, it's like, okay, let's just cool it down. Let's slow everything down.
Yeah.
And then women are like, I am fatigued. It's like, yes, you are fatigued because your body is trying to make you rest. But it can also be simple things just like in terms of food and nutrition, not getting enough calories in. So many women are either intentionally or unintentionally under eating. You know, we've been really, you know, kind of coming out of the fog of calories and trying to reduce calories and restricting and that wreaks absolute havoc with the thyroid because it needs energy coming in, it needs nutrients coming in to actually create thyroid hormones. And if we simply don't have enough energy coming in through our food, where is that other energy? Like, how do we make energy? How do we make thyroid hormones? We just simply can't. And then also thinking about like our macros, like having enough protein coming in. And then gut health also plays a really big role because a large portion of our thyroid hormones become active in the gut and then also in the liver. And so if our microbiome is out of balance, then that can really impact how well we're actually able to utilize the food coming in and converting that into energy. And that involves the thyroid. So there's a few different ways in which the thyroid can become compromised.
That makes a lot of sense because if you think about the, like, especially what I deal with in terms of nutrition is a lot of the gut and the mind is obviously working with each other. And when you're extremely stressed, your gut is off and you're not absorbing and you end up having a lot of leaky gut symptoms and stuff. So that is really interesting. I like the analogy of talking about it on a holistic level because there's so many times where when you have like a thyroid issue, it's medically based, but you're not really being told sort of like an issue of like, well, what's really happening? Mm-hmm. And it all integrates with each other. And I think the other aspect I've noticed, especially in the Western society, is that we look at everything very singular. We look at, oh, I have a thyroid issue or I have, you know, reproductive issues. But like you said, that's why I was asking about the thyroid, because it all goes hand in hand with each other. And what I've noticed is that a lot of women especially have like the low thyroid and all that kind of stuff. And they could be, you know, eating enough like iodine in terms of like the salt from seafood or in the sea salt itself, you know, trying to get it in that way. But again, it could be depleted in terms of, like you said, the calorie thing is a big one as well, which I noticed definitely within my industry is we've been in such a restriction of healthy fats and carbohydrates. So the, you know, evil and all this stuff. And it's all these new trends of keto and everything else, but it might not work for you and your body. Like a lot of women I find are very shy away from healthy fats. And it's like that notion of if I eat fat, I'll be fat or I'll have like cholesterol issues. But I think it's just misinformation. Mm-hmm. And those healthy fats are really there to help your hormones. And like you said, like it's going to take some time to get that all going. So how do you sort of integrate the acupuncture into that then? Is that more for like the stress relief type of thing?
We can integrate acupuncture in for every step of this process. So, and for no matter what's going on, acupuncture can be beneficial. It definitely is wonderful for stress. So anytime we do acupuncture, we're getting the body into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest, digest, and calm state. And if we could get into that state of the nervous system, that's when digestion is getting attention, that's when inflammation is lowering, that's when hormones are becoming, they get attention and they can become regulated and balanced, that's when the liver is able to detoxify properly. So you know, sometimes it can sound quite trivial in terms of like relaxing and de-stressing. Like everyone knows that we need to do that. But when we're actually doing that properly and regularly, every system of the body is then getting attention and is able to be regulated. So it's actually a really huge impact on the body. But in terms of acupuncture can be wonderful for so many different things along this process. It's really wonderful for helping to support ovulation in a few different ways, but especially because we can actually influence the blood flow to the reproductive system with acupuncture. And blood flow is one of the most important things for egg quality, because we can be taking, you know, all the best supplements in the world, we can be eating amazingly, but if the blood flow is actually restricted through the reproductive system, then all of that goodness can't get there through the blood, because that's how those things are moved around the body and then moved to the ovaries. So if you were taking something like CoQ10, which is a really common supplement that's wonderful for egg quality, the benefits of that CoQ10 is coming in through the blood and being delivered into the ovaries, into the egg cells. But as we've said, it can only get there through amazing blood flow. So that's another piece that we really have to take into account. Acupuncture is wonderful for that, but other things that can help with blood flow is massage. So like womb abdominal massage is really wonderful, and that's something that I recommend for a lot of my patients, especially women that have things like PCOS or even fibroids, endometriosis, when there's lots of scar tissue and fascia and adhesions. There's a lot of restriction that can happen with something like endo. And you have to manually, you know, break that up and get that blood flow circulating more optimally is so, so helpful for fertility, and then also just for managing endometriosis. Doing legs up the wall pose at nighttime, or just laying down and having your legs elevated in some way, also helps to deliver lots of fresh, healthy blood to the reproductive system. And then even things like hot baths, like a lot of simple things that can really help to increase that blood flow through the reproductive system. And it sounds quite sounds like something kind of small, but it has such a huge impact.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because if your body isn't kind of giving the reproductive system enough blood and nutrients, then it's not going to be able to sustain a healthy pregnancy even. So it's good, like, tips that people can do at home.
I would mention that sitting is one of the worst things for blood, like for pelvic blood flow. So, you know, so many people work in office jobs where they're sitting for hours and hours a day, and that in of itself can be really reducing amazing blood flow through the pelvis. So, you know, if you're on your fertility journey or if you're thinking about it one day and you know that you do sit a lot for work or for whatever reason, that's something that you can keep in the back of your mind to be, you know, regularly getting up, walking around, with the knowledge that you're helping to increase that blood flow throughout your reproductive system.
That's a good idea. I like that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that people can sort of do in terms of, like, if they are struggling to kind of come off anything that they've been doing before and kind of that preconception journey to becoming, whether they're first time parents or if they're struggling second time, third time? Is there anything else that you can kind of give value to the clients and maybe what they could do?
There's so many things that you can do, which is wonderful because, you know, so often we kind of think that there's nothing that you can do and that it's very much out of your hands. But the reality is that there's so many things that you can do to help to support your fertility. The first thing that I always talk through my patients with is getting a really great overview of what's actually going on with your menstrual cycle. So we want to be establishing, and you really want to know these details quite well, because these are things that you can chat to your doctor about, or a fertility specialist, or someone like me, like a Chinese medicine practitioner or a naturopath. You know, we need to be able to actually give solid data on your cycle, which will then help these people to help you better. So you need to know if you're ovulating, when you're ovulating in your cycle, how long your menstrual cycles usually are, which is different from how long your period is. So your menstrual cycle would be day one of your period until day one of the next period. So this might be 28 days, it might be 35 days. But then we want to know how long your actual period is, how much blood you're losing when you have your period, if you see clots, if you see spotting, if you have period pain, if you have PMS symptoms. I want to know all of that when it comes to supporting somebody or a couple, because that helps to then guide what we need to do next. Mm-hmm. And improving all of those parameters helps to improve fertility. So if someone has really heavy flooding periods, there's something going on that's driving that, that can also have implications for fertility. So low iron can cause heavy flooding periods, and low iron can also cause fertility issues. So these are the signs our body gives us that we really need to pay attention to. But then we want to be looking at, obviously, the sperm quality as well. Sperm quality plays a huge role in fertility, obviously. Mm-hmm. And often the sperm really gets ignored in terms of getting addressed early on. Often the focus is on the woman, but the focus also equally needs to be on the man as well. Mm-hmm. So paying attention to sperm quality, and that could be, reducing alcohol, reducing coffee, stop smoking or vaping, and then potentially getting, a semen analysis if it's been a few months and nothing's happening. But then as a couple, paying attention to nervous system regulation, because as we talked about before, the way that our nervous system is regulated has a downstream effect on every single system in the body, including the reproductive system. And that's for both men and women.
Right.
Sleep is incredibly important for egg quality, for sperm quality, for hormone production, for microbiome regulation, for reducing inflammation. We could have a whole podcast on just the importance of sleep. So sleep can definitely not be underestimated. So sleep really needs to be a strong focus. And then the gut is a huge, huge part of all of this, because the microbiome plays a huge role in things like insulin resistance, which is really common with PCOS. It plays a huge role in inflammation. It plays a huge integral role in hormone regulation and elimination. So if there's something going on with the menstrual cycle, we always need to be looking at the gut as well. Something simple like constipation can be causing huge hormonal issues, because we eliminate estrogen through the stool. And if someone constipated and they're not eliminating their estrogen regularly, that in of itself can cause menstrual health problems. So that's one of the reasons why gut health is so important. And then setting up your gut health is crucial, because then that helps to influence what your future baby's gut health is going to be like, which then impacts, allergies, immune stuff for them, it influences their mental health. It's crucial for everyone's health and well-being, and we do have the power to influence that for our children. And then we also want to be looking at our environment. So ideally, we want to be reducing our exposure to things like endocrine disrupting chemicals as much as we can. There is going to be a certain level that we cannot have a say over and that we're going to be exposed to.
Yeah.
But there really is a large portion that we can have control over. And that could look like, not having plastic water bottles, going for glass or stainless steel, not having your food in plastic storage containers, opting for glass. And then anything that goes on your skin, your hair, what you wash your clothes with or your dishes, like these are all opportunities you have to reduce your exposure to these types of chemicals, which can reduce egg quality and which can impact the whole endocrine system for both men and women. So these are just like snippets in the day that we have the opportunity to just reduce our exposure. And over time that adds up dramatically. Like for someone that kind of does a bit of an overhaul of their house and, switches out deodorant, body wash, cleaning products, and is all of a sudden more natural type products, they've just dramatically taken such burden off their liver and off their gut health, because a lot of these chemicals can also act like an antibiotic, and that can then play into the gut health thing. So we want to be opting for natural as much as we can. And then also food, like opting for organic food as much as we can. I do know that there can be a price barrier. So that might look like if you can't go for organic, you're washing your fruit and veg and your produce really well. But if you can go for organic, it is so worth it, because you're just not getting in pesticide and herbicide residue, which also, has research showing to be a driver of endometriosis and a driver of compromised egg quality and fertility. So we really need to be taking those types of exposures quite seriously. And, what we're doing the majority of the time influences our health. If we're having something every now and then, it's okay. But the majority of the time, if we can be reducing those chemicals as much as we can, it's only putting you in a better position.
It seems like there's quite a lot that goes into sort of like the reproductive system, like everything from what you eat to how you feel and sleep. Like when you think of sleep, I think a lot of it too is the quality of sleep for people, because some people say, well, I sleep 7 to 8 hours, and it might be broken up sleep and it might not exactly be the best quality. But when you think about sleep in terms of when you get really sick, that's what you need to recover. And that's what really what you said your body is doing, is helping your liver and everything else, your digestion, you know, you're fasting in that state as well. Your body is doing a lot of repair behind the scenes, and that's probably that crucial time where hormones are at play. So I think that's massive too, and that's a great way to support your ovulation, definitely if you're a woman, and for a guy too, like, you know, for your own health, and obviously both, you know, doing exercise and looking after your well-being. Nutrition has a big role in as well, like especially when you talked about sort of the inflammation, that I see so much of inflammation in people, because again, in this, in the Western society, we have so many inflammatory foods that we're eating on a regular basis, and they're not in their natural state anymore. And a lot of the foods, unfortunately, are genetically modified, even, you know, some fruits and vegetables and things like that, just lower quality. And you can taste the difference, like living, you know, I used to live in the UK, and I've been to like the Mediterranean, and just the food is so different when it comes from where it's actually grown, and you know, fresh seafood and stuff. And I know, especially like you're in Australia, I'm in Canada, but a lot of our food is shipped in. And I think in Australia, you get a lot of shipped in stuff too. And it does it, unfortunately, it kind of like kicks the quality of our food down like massively, and the soil and everything. So if you can try and sort of buy like a higher quality fruits and vegetables, if you can. I know everyone's usually struggling right now in terms of like with inflation and everything, but sometimes even buying frozen stuff might be even better than like the stuff that's fresh, because sometimes when you get the fresh food, you can just taste there's no flavor, and it's basically been ripening on a truck, and your body is not really getting enough nutrients from that. So, you know, if I would say sort of from a nutrition point, it's try and keep your basics, your fruits, your vegetables, your proteins, your healthy carbohydrates, like your root veggies and all that kind of stuff, and healthy fats. And then everything else is kind of just extra, because I find a lot of people live in the age of like sauces are on everything, and these, like, you just read the back of something and it's like more than a paragraph of ingredients. You can't even like explain, you know, what they are. And we're pouring that all over our food. And, you know, I think a lot of people are struggling with inflammation, and it's blocking. It's blocking that secondary, which is our reproductive system. So I really appreciate all the knowledge and you coming on here today. So where can our listeners actually find you, Lauren?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Bethany. So you can find me on my website, which is just www.laurencurtin.com. And my Instagram, where I hang out the most, is just @LaurenCurtin.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.